You're listening to KXRY Portland on 107.1 FM, 91.1 FM, and streaming online at xray.fm. I'm Sarika Mehta. Welcome to Intersections Radio, a new independent podcast which also airs on X-Ray. Intersections Radio is a show where we geek out on all things intersectionality. Today's episode features one of my favorite activists. Leroy Moore is a disability justice activist, hip-hop artist, writer, and more. He's based out of the San Francisco Bay Area, so on my recent trip to the Bay, we met up at the Golden Lotus Restaurant in downtown Oakland. Leroy has been featured on Intersections Radio before, in fact, for our inaugural broadcast last year. Since then, he's published Black Cripple Delivers Poetry and Lyrics, and he shared his latest collaborative album, Crip Hop Nation and 5th Battalion Entertainment present Broken Bodies, Police Brutality Profiling Mixtape. So we talked about his book, the intersectionality of disability justice and the Black Lives Matter movement, and how nonprofits hinder activism. This is Intersections Radio. So thank you, Leroy, for joining me again on Intersections Radio. Let's first talk about your book. As I said, Black Cripple Delivers Poetry and Lyrics. Talk about the power behind what the title and the book.
Yeah, the title of the book. The reason why I use cripple with a K, I really want to take back the language of people with disabilities that people with non-disabilities place on us and flip it in a hip-hop way. So, as everybody know, the Crips and the Bloods, you know, that story is going to find out that the story came from the person that was in the Crips and that was disabled. They're like, oh, we just call you Cripple. And it's like, no, we're just turning it into Crip. So that's what I read. That's how the name came from.
Wait, am I understanding the Crips, the gang from L.A., got their name from the word cripple?
I didn't know either. But I read it somewhere. I was like, oh, okay. You know, they got it from, you know, cripple. So I wanted to take that back and use a K just in, you know, hip-hop way. And, you know, use it as a reclaiming our language and reclaiming our history and bringing it out to today. Yeah.
And with that, you have this volume of poetry and lyrics. So tell me about the process of writing this.
Oh God, you know, I've been writing poetry since the 80s. So I've kept it, you know, all through that time. Before computers, you know. So in the 90s, I got in touch with Poor Magazine in San Francisco. And in the 90s, Poor Magazine did a chat book. Remember chat books back in the day? The chat books are really books that poets do without the Uncle Sam stamp or the ISB number. So little chat books they used to do at Kinko's and stuff. So Poor Magazine had a really small press called the Poor Press. And they did my first chat book. And at that time, it's incredible because at the time, I sold like 500 copies in one day. How I did that? I had a reading here in San Francisco, and I flew to L.A. and had a different reading, so it just sold out just like that. So that history and coming up today, I've always wrote poetry and song lyrics, so I just kept them, and I was trying to find a publisher. You know, like all writers, and you get a lot of rejection letters. And the common rejection was, you know, your writing doesn't have any audience. because publishers at the time had no clue about, you know, disability culture, disability rights. You know, it's almost like Black authors when they started, you know, the publishing companies, like, oh, there's no audience. So I ran into that many times from regular publishers, even Black publishers, because I really wanted to be published by a Black publisher. So, you know, so I kept on going. And only about 2 years ago, a friend of mine, we used to do open mic in the 90s. He's Native American. He lives in San Francisco, Kim. And Kim, we talked online. And Kim's like, you don't have a book out yet? I was like, no, because, you know, no publisher want to take it. So Kim is like, oh, let me hook you up with Poetic Matrix. They're a small poetry press. So she hooked me up with Downs, with James Downs works here. And James Downs like, yeah, let me see your stuff. And James Downs saw my stuff and passed it on to the publisher. And so that's how the book came to be.
I want to go back to what you were talking about, that one of the struggles you had in getting this published is that it's like a niche audience, that they were saying you need to have an audience, and there wasn't an audience for the issues of you know, Black person with a disability or whatever their excuse was. Talk about the response after you did get this published.
After I got it published, you know, because back in those days when I got the rejection letters, you know, independent press were hot. Now today, it's the opposite. There's a lack of independent presses, and there's a lack of black presses. So although, you know, I felt good about getting the book out there, a lot of presses that I went to in the 90s were gone. So, you know, I really bypassed that and really talked to my community. And a lot of people, a lot of Black youth, you know, loved it. A lot of Black disabled youth loved it. Matter of fact, I'm going to Chicago in April. And their independent thing, the Living Center, Access Living, has a group of Black disabled activists and artists. So they're excited to have me there. So, you know, that's the reason why I did it. You know, it's for, you know, Black disabled people growing up now, you know, and give them the history and the struggle and, you know.
Well, you're right. There's hardly anything out there with this perspective, frankly. I would imagine that this has reached a new audience. And I was wondering, have you received any response from readers?
Oh, yeah. You know, friends that read it, that really liked it. One artist, his visual artwork is in the book, and he is an activist, and I mailed him a copy. He's in prison, unfortunately, and he loved it. You know, he's a Black man with a disability. He said, "Leroy, this could go into schools, you know, because I have in the back of the book I have a list of trivia questions, Black disabled history trivia questions." And he said, wow, this can go into schools because, you know, Black disabled youth don't know this history. And even teachers don't know it, you know? So yeah, I get those kind of responses.
Even those of us who are outsiders to this, to what your experiences are, I mean, everyone can benefit.
Leroy has a history of working in issues of police brutality and people with disabilities. With a new wave of press and praise for the Black Lives Matter movement, I wondered about the place of people of color with disabilities.
Matter of fact, in the book, chapter 2, is about police brutality against people with disabilities. And every chapter I start with a quote. And on chapter 2, I start with a quote from my niece back in, I think it was a couple of years ago when they were living here. I used to pick up my niece and nephew from school. And my niece Ace one time ran out, grabbed my hand. And she looked up at me and she says, "Uncle Wee Boy, I don't like cops because they mess with you." Because she witnessed cops, profiling me because of my disability.
How old was she when she said that?
Oh my God, Ace was about, I think, 4 or 5, I think.
So what did you say then?
What did I say? I was like, Ace, yeah, I totally understand your frustration. You've seen a lot. And, just keep on holding on to that activism and being yourself, So, it's funny. If kids could see it, but not adults, it just totally blows my mind. I've been involved with police brutality issues since the 80s, back in New York and Connecticut, and of course here in the Bay Area, way before Black Lives Matter. I've been involved with October 22nd Coalition. Poor Magazine's been involved with police brutality. I've been involved with the Idris Deli Foundation. Misa's son got shot up at the Sony Metron in San Francisco. So, the issue of police brutality has always been here. And the shooting of Black, disabled men, women, trans, youth has been here. The sad thing, even today, is that I don't know why, but there's a lack of connection between movements around disability and around poverty. If you're poor, Black, and disabled, I guess there's no bling bling for activism or activists to come and support it. It just blows my mind.
So do you feel solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, or how do you feel about this?
I think Black Lives Matter, is doing their piece. I think in activism in today's society, we need to stop putting all our eggs in one basket. There's many people that's doing great work. Like I said, the Idris Deli Foundation, So I think Black Lives Matter could learn around disability justice with Sins and Ballot if they ever take that up. But I also see that there's other grassroots collectives that are kicking butt, There's this group in New York called the People's Assembly. And I interviewed them last month, and they did a whole rally around police brutality with people with disabilities, controlled by people with disabilities. So those are the activists that I want to get in contact with. I just was talking to a disabled activist this morning in D.C. that wanted to do a campaign around police brutality against people with disabilities. So, those are the people that I want to really concentrate, because I think, I think they're really closer to the issue, closer to grassroots issues. They're not looking for I'm not saying that Black Lives Matter is, but they're not looking for being on TV to talk about it. You know, they're looking for, you know, what's our community response about it, you know? So, you know, those are the people that I want to concentrate on. And if, you know, Black Lives Matter come around and be more open, then yeah, let's talk about it. But, you know, I think we have, in this time, we need to do something now. And we can wait until other collectors get around to the issue. But the people that are doing stuff on police brutality and people with disabilities need to really do that work, you know.
Before we started recording our interview, you said we've been around much longer than the Black Lives Matter movement. And it's not to say that the issues haven't been around. It's just, I assume that you meant that the work that you've been doing, the work that all these other collectives have been doing has been around longer, but Black Lives Matter seems to have gotten more awareness or more press or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go back to 1918, you know, and the lynching and the story of Jesse Washington, a young black man with a disability, was lynched. You know, so, you know, the issue has been around since slavery, you know, so it's nothing new. And, you know, the Black Panthers did their work on it, you know. So, yeah, the issue has been around, you know, and that's all we can do is do our work, and hopefully that people will come to awareness, and not only awareness, but put people with disabilities in speaking roles, you know, in front of the rally, not in back, and really incorporate what disability justice looks like. You know, it's more than just a rally.
What does disability justice look like?
That's a good question. And, you know, I give it out to my friend Patty Byrne, Patty Byrne and Mia, that really sat down years ago and talked about, you know, disability justice and how is it different from disability rights, and, you know, just talking about how people were left out in the disability rights movement, you know, transgender people with disabilities, those of color with disabilities, and how does that look like? And, you know, Patty's like, you know, how can we move together? So, you know, disability justice really challenges people about not only ableism, but how institutions can really look on how we can change the environment when it comes to practicing our values in institutions. You know, if, for example, sins and valid always start out with, in the meeting, access needs.
Well, hold on 1 second. Maybe first explain what is sins and valid and then talk about that.
Yeah, sins and valid is a performance group and also a disability justice group in the Bay Area. That is run by and controlled by people of color, transgender people, queer people. And yeah, it's a performance group, and also Sins and Valley does disability justice trainings, you know, around the Bay Area nationally. So, We really looked at, you know, if we're gonna have people with disabilities, trans people with disabilities, disabled people of color, you know, how does that look like in our institutions? You know, how can we make it more accessible? So when we were in meetings, we first asked, you know, what's your access needs to being in this meeting? Because usually, you know, me growing up, I was so used to, you know, Robert rules of, you know, Robert rules when it comes to meetings, you know, you take a vote and all that stuff. But really, you know, we were trying to, you know, say that doesn't work for us. This doesn't work for a person with a disability that needs breaks, you know. So yeah, disability justice is not only a 9-to-5, but it's a practice throughout your life. And trying to get that into activist circles is hard because a lot of activists deal with campaign, which you have a target goal, you have a target time, and we're seen to, you know, rush to that goal. And
this especially is an election year.
Yeah, exactly. And that doesn't help anybody, you know? So yeah. So since the ballot is, you know, trying to express that kind of way of doing our work, you know, if it's activism, if it's a, you know, nonprofit, you know, trying to incorporate disability justice into our work, especially in the left. the left has no clue around disability, you know. And still, in today, in 2016, you know, we can look at activism and it's like, all right, where's people with disabilities? You know, you look at a rally, and you look at who's at the back of the rally is people with disabilities. So why are they left in the back? You know? It's things like that.
I pressed Leroy to explain what this meant. Who are the left? And what does this mean for activists with disabilities?
You know, the left, because I'm an activist first, and I say I'm a poet and all this stuff, but I'm an activist first. And growing up in an activist family, the left to me was activists, you know, was activist organizations, was, you know, Rainbow Coalition back in the 70s. And today, you know, of course, we include some nonprofits in the left circle. So my view about the left is more about people that are activists, organizations that grew out of activism, you know. So yeah.
And you said that you don't feel that they have been really doing their part in aligning with you guys.
Aligning with disability, no, unfortunately. And it's so sad to say, you know, it's so sad to say in 2016 that it's still like that, you know. And that's a whole history of the disability rights movement and people of color are activist movements because, you know, both of them were going on at the same time in the 70s and 60s, but this is what I just wanted to have to say it was at that time middle class white movement. So my mother never got in contact with this rights movement, although, you know, she knew about services for me, but she never, you know, felt at home. And it just realized for me because it was mainly a white, straight man's movement. So if you got that history, then of course, people of color, activists, and the rest, don't see display as a part of their movement because of racism, ableism, and not really in, you know, on people of color side, not really knowing about disability history, disability rights. You know, although, you know, I say disability rights was a white movement, if you go beyond the rights, disability was, you know, a black, a people of color, you know? I mean, blues started with blind blues, you know, performers. So people of color with disabilities have been there, you know. Harry Tubman had a disability. So, you know, that kind of history, that kind of culture is there. But, you know, it's not brought out for the black community or the people of color community. And in the disability community, you know, race is still not, it's still not talked about in a deep, you know, kind of way.
Those are the main issues I wanted to talk about. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up while we're hanging out here in Oakland?
Yeah, I also want to talk about the nonprofit system. And it's hard because the nonprofit system and activism has been intertwined for so many years. Yeah, I see nowadays that a lot of our activism comes from nonprofits. And I see that restricts what we can do, you know, because of grants and stuff. I see that as a really thing that we really need to really think about if we, and at the social justice convention back in Atlanta years ago, they had this slogan about a different world is possible. So if that slogan is right, then we need to come up with totally new ways of doing our work. You know, if a different world is possible, then we need to really critique why. A lot of us think that policy is the only way to change things. You know, we need to see why. Yeah, a lot of our activism has become nonprofit, and can we come up with a new strategy to really? Or a new foundation, or new answers to construct that. Because if we're not, then we're just going in circles, you know. I've found out that a lot of groups, I won't say their names, but a lot of groups that are fighting against gentrification are taking grants from tech industries.
Like, well, that's an interesting irony.
Yeah. They call out, you know, okay, fight gentrification, you're taking a grant from Google, you know? So it just blows my mind. But I think we've been so used of this structure, of this nonprofit structure, that we can't think of a new way to do things. Yeah. because it's tied. It's tied to our jobs. You know, we live in capitalism, so it's tied to our jobs. So, you know, no wonder we can't think of the new solutions, because if we do, that means we're out of a job. So it's hard.
Leroy Moore, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to chat with me here in Oakland, and for a really great interview. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Leroy Moore, hip-hop artist and disability justice activist. He's the author of Black Cripple Delivers Poetry and Lyrics. To engage with interviews, read transcripts, and learn more, check out intersectionsradio.wordpress.com. Visit the same website for previous episodes of this podcast, and join the Facebook community at facebook.com/intersectionsradio. I'm Sarika Mehta, and this has been Intersections Radio. Thanks for listening.